Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
In disgrace with fortune in men's eyes, I'll alone be weep my outcast day, in trouble deaf heaven.
720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch with you for the next hour. That song, very beautiful song, that is Rufus Wainwright. It is Shakespearean sonnet number 29. So beautiful. And that's, of course, he set that song to music. And the reason we are rocking to that song right now, maybe rocking is the wrong word, grooving, swooning to that beautiful song right now, is because there's a very, very interesting story on Mashable that I want to talk about today that is all about points with the ladies. Okay, so it says, this story says that if you have put some kind of Shakespearean wording in your online dating profile, you're going to do about 27% better if you're a dude looking for a lady. So if any other circumstances, I don't know what to tell you. I can't help you with that. But if you're a dude looking for a lady, you may want to put a little bit of Shakespeare in your online profile because it's looking like you're going to do about 27% better with ladies than those who do not.
Okay, Amy, question.
Yes, ma'am.
If you are online dating and you swipe across a profile that has some Shakespeare in it, what's your first reaction?
It depends on what the Shakespeare is, I think. If it's a very obvious one, if it's like, shall I compare thee to a summer's day? I'm going to be like, Tool, right? I'm probably not going to, if it's a really, really well-known one, but if it's a little more obscure, you know, An obscure literary reference, I think is a good thing.
You would eat that up?
I don't know if eat it up would be.
Swipe right instead of left.
I would be more likely to probably. I mean, I don't know. There's so many other factors. You can't just say like, well, I just like him because of the Shakespeare.
Okay, bonus point then.
Right.
Yeah, I think if I saw Shakespeare in somebody's profile, same as you, if it was like, oh, Romeo, you know, something from Romeo and Juliet,
right,
I would be
out.
You know, no, but.
Then
if
you
it was
don't want
well
something
written,
super freaky either. There's some like Midsummer Night's Dream and Taming of the Shrew where it gets pretty freaky. That's probably a little too forward.
I wonder if the guy put Shakespeare in the profile and no girl really gets it, is that
that's,
you know,
probably natural selection. I mean, especially if it's like an obscure reference, if you're putting something obscure, you would have a connection with someone over the other person also getting an obscure reference.
But then I would also think, well, they took the time to find Shakespeare. They're smart. They're well read. Obviously.
But then the flip side of that is if you fake that, it could come off unbelievably pretentious.
That's true too.
Right. And you could be like, look at this guy digging through his AP English class notes like a tool. Right. Well, so it looks like online daters who mention Shakespeare the most are in locations where there are famed Shakespearean festivals, like Ashland, Oregon. Apparently that's really, really the way to, because there's a little more interest in the Shakespeare.
Okay.
Right around there.
I don't even know, like, where are some other famous Shakespeare festivals?
I know there's a delightful one in Fort Worth, Texas. You know, New York has quite a nice one. There's lots of good ones. I don't know. Maybe it only works right after a Shakespearean festival,
yes.
Right? For a couple of weeks, you're like,
they're inspired.
Everybody just saw Shakespeare in the park. I can use this as a line. I'm going to get my Shakespearean game going. I don't know. It is really interesting. And I'm always fascinated by these, you know, all these studies that that use online dating data to see what people do, to see, you know, what people put in, what they don't. And not that I think you should, you know, I think no matter what, be yourself. You do you, and you will, you know, you don't want to match with somebody who, you know, that you've done so under a false pretense. You want to match with someone that, you know, that you like and who likes you for you. But it is interesting to look at data of, you know, people that include these words do better than this. Or I remember there was one a few months ago that we talked about here on the show that was looking at the type of photo, that it was, if your photo was outside, if it was like from the waist up, it was more likely to get a swipe than if it was a really tight shot on your face or something like that. I mean,
so much pressure.
So much to think about.
Yeah.
So much to think about.
That was the problem with online dating. I just totally would overanalyze, like, what to put in my profile. What profile pictures should I use? What other pictures should, because, you know, if you only have one picture, that's not good. And then I would also overanalyze the guy's picture. If you're in a bathroom taking a selfie, not going to swipe. Right. If you are outside with your shirt off, probably not going to be clicking yes on you.
But I do think the profile matter. I mean, the profile language matters so much.
That definitely.
Because it's an opportunity to show a little bit of personality and say what you're looking for. Just like, hey, I'm just here to meet fun people and see what it leads to. Or like, hey, I'm looking for the real thing. Or, you know, you can kind of say what you're looking for and set some degree of expectation, I think. But I'm reminded of when we're talking about Shakespeare here and the things you put in profiles. Of course, I'm thinking of Robin Williams in Dead Poets Society, where he says, language was invented for one reason, boys, to woo women.
Nice. So listen, boys, and start wooing us.
And in that endeavor, laziness will not do. I love that about language, and I love when you know, talking about language and thinking about it. Anyway, that was just a little fun thing to kick the show off today, because it is both the anniversary of Shakespeare's death and the anniversary of his birthday. So there's a lot of Shakespearean stuff to celebrate today. There's lots of interesting tools out there. If you Google for this, there's a Shakespearean insult generator that is super fun that I perhaps had a bit too much fun with this morning preparing for the show. So feel free to go there. I don't even know if I can say half the Shakespearean insults on the air because they're, you know, at some point they were quite raunchy, but, you know, things that have fallen out of, not fallen out of favor, but, you know, language shifts, as we talk about often on the show when we talk about buzzwords, how some words have taken on new meanings. Anyway, my friends, we are also today on the Wintrust Business Lunch going to be talking with Karen Calabrese, a journalist who wrote about her. We're going to be talking about her vegan empire. You know, we've seen Karen's raw foods and all that kind of stuff around town. We've seen that. So we're going to be taking a look at that empire because, you know what, it's changed a bit. For as much as we all think about healthy food and all that, there are some hurdles to overcome with that. So we're going to be doing that. And we're going to be looking, of course, at some of the tweets that went out over after Prince's death was announced, because it never fails that a company will try to hop on a bandwagon and ride the wave of a hashtag, do something like that, and capture some social media attention by you know, attaching themselves to something that's trending online. But it never fails that a brand will take a misstep. We've seen this so many times. DiGiorno is one I've talked about on this show before. They kind of made a misstep talking about domestic violence, and it was really not good. So we're going to be talking about that and taking a look at some Prince tweets, including a couple that got pulled. And we're going to be talking about email etiquette, because we cannot stop talking about email etiquette until we're all just doing a better job on email and we're a little more polite and a little bit less passive aggressive. But with that, we're going to be talking about some productivity tips and some productivity experiments that we've had lately. So all that and more here in just a bit on the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us on this very beautiful Saturday afternoon. Happy that you're listening. A little bit later in the show, we're going to be talking about some email and productivity tips and etiquette and all that good stuff. Straighten it all out. Get us all being our super productive selves. It will be marvelous. And we're going to be taking a look at some tweets that were sent right after the announcement of Prince's death. They got a couple of brands in a little bit of trouble. But right now, we're joined by Crain's contributor, Mariba Knight, who has written quite a bit about Karen Calabrese. You know her from Karen's Raw Foods. And, you know, this woman who really built this raw and vegan food empire. And at a time when so many people are so healthy, conscious, we're all thinking about the food that we buy and where it's from and how it's grown and what's in it and all those things. You think it would be a time of, you know, a lot of, you know, flourishing and all that. But indeed, this empire has hit some rough spots. So welcome to the program, Mariba. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, so talk us through this a bit, because I think we've seen this iconic Karen's brand all around the city, and so many people know it and love it. But in fact, there have been some rough spots.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she, you know, first opened her very first Karen's Fresh Corner 20 years ago, 1995, and she's kind of built an empire from there. But the landscape's changed a lot, and she hasn't exactly kind of kept up with her competition in certain ways. She was a pioneer at one point, but she's kind of fallen out of step. And so we've seen, you know, two of her locations close. She had one in the West Loop, which was a higher end restaurant, and she also had Karen's Cooked, And she's down to one location in Lincoln Park, and she'll soon be moving out of there. It's a pretty large space, home to a bistro and market, and she does classes. She's really diversified, some might say even too much. So there's a lot of competition. You know, we think about Freshie, Protein Bar. You can buy Amazon, you know, juice detoxes. I mean, it's just really worked its way into so many fast casual restaurants. And because of that, she's really kind of lost her edge in a way. She's just being bombarded by a glut of competition. But she's also made a few, you know, business mistakes along the way.
Right. And, you know, it's just, it's so interesting because, it, you know, from the outside looking in, it seems quite fine. It seems like it's all good. And in fact, yeah, it's a time when it should be so, you know, flourishing so much just because there, as you say, there are so many other options. But the, you know, the flip side of that is that those other options are hurting her because that she used to be kind of the source for that sort of healthy food. And now it's much more accessible to us. But there's also been some real hardships that have hit her. At one point, she even opened a GoFundMe to try to save the restaurant.
Yeah, right. She did. She opened a GoFundMe. And, you know, we live in an era where people are doing Kickstarters, GoFundMe. I mean, it's something that's actually familiar for a lot of independent businesses. And let's remember, Karen is an independent business, mm-hmm. even though she kind of built an empire. And, you know, it was all well and good, but then it came out, you know, that she had a number of lawsuits that had trailed her. She had, you know, settled with her landlord, and then a new lawsuit started. She had gotten hit with an ADA lawsuit for not being handicap accessible. She settled that. And she had some issues with her actual, you know, home, condo. She lives in the Gold Coast. So it was kind of a feeling of not enough transparency, I think folks had, and that really did her in on that GoFundMe. She barely raised any money. I say in the article, you know, she's, I think, raised $7,288. She's looking for $300,000. So, yeah, it was a little bit of a PR mishap, I'd say. You know, she had good intentions, but she just didn't reveal everything. And then she had this anonymous post that went up about her business, and that was hurtful. It had a lot of, she says, misinformation, although there was some truth she admitted about kind of how her business is run and some of her own lavish lifestyle habits. So it just, yeah, she's kind of being hit on all sides, and she is dealing with this glut of competition, and she's dealing with some bad business decisions. And then she's also dealing with being kind of this celebrity, you know, in this kind of era of total transparency. We want to know everything about our celebrities. And her image feels a little bit dated. I mean, none of her restaurants talk about sustainability or locally sourced. You know, those are buzzwords. I mean, I interviewed a couple analysts for this piece, and they're all saying, you know, you got to incorporate that into your business plan these days. It can't just be a vanity project. You know, it can't be all about you'll look good if you do this. It's got to be about what are you going to give back to the world, or how is it going to be green, sustainable, you know, and employ local farmers, or, you know, pass kind of that benefit on to the community.
Hey, Mirba, this is Kristen, the producer. Yeah. And I feel terrible for Karen in the sense that she has ran, you know, made some poor business decisions. But I'm even more sad that things aren't going well, because bottom line, her food is great. I am not a vegan, but I've been to the Halsted location, mm-hmm. and had wonderful meals there. I've like taken stuff to go, and you know, I don't care what the label says. I don't care. I mean, it's not that I don't care about sustainability, but sometimes I do feel like that is slapped on products just as a marketing
sure.
plug. But her food, bottom line, is really good. And so I really do hate to see this happen, where, you know, we might lose this kind of little gem that we have here in Chicago just based on poor business decisions.
You're absolutely right. I mean, she has a huge number of loyal followers. When I talked to her, she said the day before people had brought in cards and checks, and Some of her vendors had wiped her accounts clean. I mean, she's really built up over the years a loyal following who love her food. And, you know, that is her skill. So she is going to, you know, take it down a notch and downsize. And in a way, she's feeling like this is a reinvention for her. You know, she's going to go back to kind of one-on-one counseling. She'll, you know, make it so that she can compete, hopefully, with those, you know, fast casual kind of pickups so you can keep getting things from a deli. But yeah, I mean, you make a really good point. There are so many people that have benefited from what she's taught, you know, Chicago as a community about this. She was the first restaurant here that ever did this.
And bottom line, she looks fabulous.
I was just about to say,
so
I mean,
great.
She's a walking testament to her lifestyle and her food and, and what it means to live healthy and eat good quality food, because she looks phenomenal. She's, how old is she? 60?
She's 69. She turned 69 this week.
She looks like she could be 40.
Absolutely she does. She is absolutely stunning. She looks so good and so healthy.
And this is not, she looks young, not because of any unnatural products like Botox or fillers or anything like that. She is thin, not overly thin. She looks very healthy. And, you know, I think it's just a testament of her eating lifestyle that she just did not age hardly at all.
Well, and I think, too, it's a really interesting look at particularly the area of where people were posting things anonymously online and the GoFundMe. And it, to me, it's such an interesting shift in where we are for the small business owner right now that a band of commenters, even one comment can be a bullet to your business, can really take you down, can really spread misinformation or just, you know, somebody with an axe to grind, but also the power of the small business owner to take matters into her own hands and, you know, do a GoFundMe, do a Kickstarter, do an Indiegogo, something like that, and try to reroute. But, you know, we'll keep looking to you, Mariba, for updates on this story, this, you know, iconic Chicago institution of healthy, healthy food and really kind of one of the first ones around here. It's, you know, unfortunate to see that she is struggling, but I'm sure she will reinvent herself and keep on rolling. Thanks, Mariba.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Have a great day. All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break and get you news with our good friend Bob Kessler. And when we come back, we are going to be talking about email etiquette and productivity, two of my favorite things to talk about. All right. We'll be back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here with you on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Lots of stuff to do here on this very beautiful Saturday afternoon. Thank you for being with us so very, very much. Hope you are enjoying all of the sunshine. Well, my friends, that, of course, was a very well-known Prince song that we were just listening to, and we got the sad, sad news this week that Prince had died. And that was so shocking to so many people. And you know, the fans outpouring, you know, their people were throwing Purple Rain dance parties that were all over social media. There was lots of beautiful purple things covering Instagram immediately. And there were a lot of tweets, you know, expressing sadness and really, you know, fans really, really mourning his passing. And very interestingly, as is always the case, it never fails. There's a large news story. Brands try to hop on that, and they try to attach themselves to a large trend. You know, many times it's completely innocuous. For example, we see a lot of news organizations quickly run to their archives and pull photos together for, you know, here's prints throughout the years, and they'll put together a photo gallery, and they'll put, you know, 100 or so photos together for people to look through. Of course, that is page views for them, so it is revenue at the end of the day, but it's also sharing information, and it's being a resource. And that's, I think, where it breaks down, and it gets a little bit weird for brands when they're not trying to be a resource, they're just trying to kind of sell. So here to talk with us now is EJ Schultz, who is the Chicago Bureau Chief for Advertising Age. Welcome to the program, EJ.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Certainly. Thanks for being with us. Well, there were certainly a lot of Prince tweets this week, of course, as is the case anytime some, you know, a beloved artist leaves this mortal coil. But there were a couple of brands that, as is always the case, there were a couple of brands that kind of stepped in it, and two tweets in particular that got pulled down. Talk us through that.
Sure. We started seeing this pretty quickly right after the news broke, and this is something that's been going on for a few years now. I think the classic tweet that everyone points to is back in 2013 when the lights went out at the Superdome during the Super Bowl, and Oreo had a tweet said, "You can still dunk in the dark." That was positively reviewed by almost everyone, brought the brand a ton of attention. And ever since then, it seems like every current event, any cultural moment, you know, the brands try to use their social media accounts to try to get this attention. And that was what happened after Prince's death. And unfortunately, most of the time, the tweets either don't get noticed or they get noticed for negative reasons. Because like you said, it looks a little bit crass and commercial. One of the tweets that got some negative attention the other day was when Cheerios had tweeted "rest in peace" against the purple background, and they had a little Cheerio dotting the I. They quickly pulled the tweet and then were forced to issue a statement saying we didn't want the tweet to be misinterpreted and removed it out of respect for Prince. But of course, in this day and age, everyone had saved the tweet, so journalists were, you know, retweeting it, and it ended up sort of backfiring even more.
Right. You know, the one that comes to mind is the one that was so cringeworthy was when DiGiorno's, it was kind of during the Ray Rice domestic violence, you know, situation, all that was going on, and the hashtag "Why I Stayed" started to trend, during which people who had been victims of domestic violence were talking about how difficult it is to leave an abusive situation. And DiGiorno's Pizza, their social media account, they tweeted, there was this hashtag of "Why I Stayed." They said, "Why I Stayed," and they wrote, "Because you had pizza." And I mean, people just lost their minds over that. They're like, how could you make a joke about pizza when we're talking about something as serious as domestic violence? You know, of course, they apologized, took it down, and wrote, "Oh, we didn't even realize what the hashtag was," right? But, you know, it's so predictable now. I mean, that people almost wait for it. I, in fact, saw a tweet the other day right after Prince, right after his death was announced, of someone saying, okay, what brand's going to step in it first?
Right. Having said that, I think there was at least one success story. I don't know if you saw the Corvette tweet. Mm-hmm. And then they subsequently ran ads in newspapers that said, "Baby, that was much too fast." And, you know, and then it just listed Prince's birth and death year. And I think that one worked because Corvette obviously has a connection to Prince via the song lyric. You could debate whether or not Prince would have appreciated that tweet and that ad. But
right.
I think the goal for the brand was to obviously appeal to their fans. And I think that one probably worked.
Yeah, I actually just saw on my Facebook timeline a few people that had the Chicago Tribune paper held up with the ad, and they said, "Oh, nicely played, Chevy."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think people liked that one. I saw a lot of people retweeting it. I saw a lot of people screen grabbing that and putting it on Instagram. And yeah, a lot of people seemed to like that Corvette one. But it seemed like a lot of brands weighed in. Caribou Coffee and 3M and NASA, like all kind of people. Even, you know, NASA put up the purple, you know, the star, not star formation, but like a purple nebula in honor of Prince. They posted that, of course. So some of them did an all right job with it.
I think we saw the Caribou and 3M. Those are all Minnesota companies. So I think that they felt, well, this is a hometown guy. We need to weigh in here. Unfortunately, I think they're living in a bit of a vacuum because I don't think the average person probably doesn't know that those brands are based in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they're not going to make that connection, and they're going to be wondering, you know, why does Cheerios care about this? Cheerios, of course, being owned by General Mills.
Right. I don't think I realized
that. Maybe
a
more local play would have been appropriate for those brands, something in their local market.
I think, you know, when we saw the Minnesota Twins, you know, they tweeted, "Fitting that it's raining in Minneapolis today." That, you know, that one people get. I think people associate Target with the area, those kind of things. You know, I liked kind of some of the more national plays, too, going along the lines of Corvette. You know, Pandora said, "Purple rain is falling for Prince today," and hashtag RIP Prince. That was, you know, appropriate because it acknowledges their connection to Prince was musical. You know, that it was about, we played his songs, we got his songs to people. Yahoo Movies did a similar one talking about, you know, roles he had had and things he did, his on-screen moments, and they shared those. So I think it's interesting because it seems like it works the best when it is completely in line with what you're doing as a brand anyway.
Correct. And I think we, and there's certain brands that maybe they didn't have a direct connection, but for instance, Maker's Mark, I thought, had a decent tweet that just showed the image of the classic Maker's Mark bottle with, instead of the red plastic covering over the top, it was purple. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if your liquor, alcohol, and music kind of go together, so that's understandable. I don't think that's going to get a lot of backlash unless they are overtly doing something stupid.
Right, right, which sometimes brands do. Never fails. All right, EJ Schultz, thanks so much for being with us. Chicago Bureau Chief for Ad Age. We will talk to you again soon. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
All right, have a great day. All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break and all that good stuff. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about productivity and email etiquette. Super, super important stuff. So stick around. We will have that conversation. It will be all good here on 720 WGN. Let's go. 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Wrapping things up here in just a bit for you and then turning things over to the next show, but we'll see you back here next week. But before I go, there's a very important thing to talk about, and that is email etiquette. Such a big deal. We've talked about this very thing on the show before, but as regular listeners know, I'm darn near obsessed with productivity hacks and tricks and things like that because I want to be a model of efficiency in everything that I do. And we have talked about this many times on this program, but businessnewsdaily.com has a really good reminder. It's not about any wild tricks out of thin air. It's just some good, solid advice about email etiquette that I could not agree with more that I want to talk about a little bit today. And the first one is just send less email. We send way too much email, way too much email. I think we have really got to get a handle on it because people are really stressed out by email because people use it like a to-do list. People, I mean, it is a, I am so stressed out when I just have so many emails in my inbox. And I do a lot of different projects. I have right. a lot of different things. So I've got like some emails coming in about guests on the show. And then I've got some emails about, you know, I'm working on a documentary film. So I've got emails about that. And I've got emails about this and emails about that. And it's easy to get overwhelmed. And it feels like if you don't look at it for a day or two,
you see on your phone, over. It says like 1,000 unread emails.
Yeah. And that's really stressful. We mm-hmm. got to get a handle on that. Really, really do. Especially when you're sending a bunch.
Here's my question.
What's
so
up?
I love the idea of send less emails. I am a big proponent of that, but I've been told that I need to like confirm things more. Someone will shoot me an email telling me to do something. And in the past I would just, I saw your email. I read it. I don't feel like I need to then email back, got it, or okay, or something yeah. like that, because to me, that's just a waste of time. But then people were like, well, I wasn't sure if you've got my email, or, you know, I would really appreciate if you would just acknowledge it. So now I'm into the habit of writing back, got it. And I just feel like it's a waste of my time.
So here's what I do with that. I like to cover my own butt with that kind of thing. So I will mirror back what I to confirm what I'm doing. If it is a transactional or a request or a deal or we're booking something, I'll write back and say, great, I will see you at, I will talk to you at 12:15 on Saturday, the 23rd on the business lunch.
Yes. And I will say for work, it is a little different. With booking stuff, I am very like anal on and making
I'll
sure
mirror
I have things
back
confirmed.
To make sure.
But like,
but
this
where
is more
I get
like my life,
right? Where I get sideways about it, if it's a if someone is has a question mark over my head about something, I'll write them back. Like, are you coming to this event? Like, hey, we're all going to go here. Do you want to go? Yeah, I will, or whatever. If it's something like that. Where I get hung up on the same thing is when it gets into thanks, great, okay, cool, see you soon, blah, blah, blah. All those back and forth. I used to have a boss that would really, really hated that. And the first time I wrote back to her, she said, hey, will you do X, Y, and Z? And I said, absolutely, I'll do that right now and I'll send it over. And she, when I did, I sent it to her and she said, this looks really wonderful. Thanks for doing that. And I said, I wrote her back. I said, you're so welcome. Thank you. And she got up and came over to me and she was like, you know what? We get too much email in our lives, and I appreciate that, and that was nice of you, but we don't need to get down to the, you know, the back and forth. No, you have a good day. No, you have a good day. You know, she was like, I won't think you're rude if you don't reply to something like that. She said,
yeah, that's good to know.
So like she set that rule. So that's something I think people could do. Like as a boss, you could set that up with your team and say, you know, I don't, I expect you to be, you know, to be polite and kind on email, but let's not spend five emails thanking each other necessarily. Mm-hmm. I think that's a fair one. But I've also been, because of my obsession with productivity, I took a class recently about using digital tools to up your productivity ante. And one thing that I was really, I've been thinking a lot about, and this was mentioned in the class, was how much easier it is to do a text message or a Twitter DM or something like that to cut down on your email volume. And so I've been experimenting with that a little bit, and I have gotten much higher response rates. If I text someone a link and say, hey, I saw this article and it reminds me of you. Although an article, I think, is kind of weird. I feel like for me to text you an article, I've got to know you pretty well.
Yeah. Yes. Agreed.
That seems like I'm asking you to read it with some degree of urgency. I know you, and I know you would really like this. So someone I don't know that well, I don't think I would do that too. But I might tweet it and say, you know, five reasons why you should really get a handle on send less email, CC at Kristen Decker, whatever. Mm-hmm. I might do something like that to get your attention or get, you know, send you that tweet rather than send you an email, because then it seems like a task.
Yes.
So there's that, right? But I think I think we're getting mighty passive aggressive in our email, and that kind of stuff keeps me awake at night.
Totally.
When someone says something quite rude and then ends it with a smiley face, I want to smack them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So going forward, if you wouldn't mind doing the following and the smiley, don't do that. Say, hey, don't do that again. Mm-hmm. Like, I need you to stop doing this and do this instead. Just be direct with me. I'm a grown woman.
Right.
And just be, let's be adults here. So I think that I used to, when I was managing a pretty large team, I had one person in particular that her emails enraged me. And she never meant it. She was very sweet. So one day I pulled her into my office and I said, will you do me a favor? I want you to read your emails before you send them out loud to yourself. I want you to try that. And she really thought that was crazy. So I printed a couple and I was like, I want you to just read these two emails and tell me what they sound like. She goes, gosh, I really sound kind of rude. I'm like, yeah, you kind of do.
I got called out on that because, again, don't like to put in a lot of effort. I mean, not a lot of effort, but I don't want to spend 10 minutes being like, hi, that, you know,
yeah,
Beth, comma, blah, 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 blah. And a good friend of mine who I worked with her at the time was like, Decker, I don't get it. Like, I know you very well. I know you're nice. When you send me an email, sometimes you come off very passive aggressive. Mm. And I'm like, oh, really? Like, I never even thought of it that way.
You know,
so I did take more time, just like how you pointed it out to your coworker, to kind of make sure that it wasn't coming across being like,
I think it's the same professionalism that you would need in a memo.
Yeah.
You know, always. And also this, especially in our business, Decker, right? I assume any email I send ever can get printed and sent to another journalist.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yes.
I always assume. I never say anything in email that I would not, that I, you know, I feel like if I couldn't stand up in front of my colleagues and explain why I said that with a good reason, you know, then it's not useful. Like, don't put that in an email.
Right.
Like, don't gossip anyway. I think gossip is terrible. But,
right.
But certainly don't put that.
Yeah, don't put it in print.
In email. Yeah, don't do that. So I think professionalism is a really, really big one. But you know what? To the issue in particular that you were talking about, I know someone who has a little note in her email signature that says something like, it's very sweet and cute even. It says something like, friends, let's agree we all get too much email and keep these brief.
Oh, okay. I like that. If I saw that email, I'd be like,
right.
I'm not going to be responding back. Thanks.
Right. So if she will.
You're wonderful.
So when she sends an email just to say, cool, see you at 7. I don't take it personally. I don't think it doesn't sound flip or snarky or dismissive to me, because I know she's a busy woman and she's focused on her big goals in her life and she wants to take care of those and not spend her life emailing, which is what we're all doing. I think more people are spending most of their jobs emailing. I've heard so many people lately say, I feel like I email for a living.
There are times where I have to dedicate like an hour of my day in just going through email.
Yeah.
Figuring out what to archive, what to delete, what needs follow up, what needs action. Another pet peeve though of mine, and I have someone I know that does this.
Oh, I hope it's not me.
No, it's not. They will pretty much put whatever task or question or whatever the point of the email is, that's their subject line.
Okay.
So it will go on and on, and I hate that.
I have seen people do that, but they put NFT, which I didn't know what that meant at first, but if it's a quick question like, hey, do you have this TPS report? And then in parentheses, NFT, meaning no further text, so you don't have to open it. But I think you have to set that up.
Yeah, no, this person does not do that.
Yeah, you've got to set that
they
up.
They just
with
put
them first.
A long rambling question as the subject line.
But worse, when the subject line is "Hey," and the actual email is like a big deal.
Oh yeah,
because it looks chatty and it looks insignificant, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh, it's just someone saying hi, no big deal. But then you look at it and you're like, oh, I was actually being invited to your 40th birthday party and I missed it because this looked really, There are two tools that I use that I like a lot. One is called Sane Inbox that really does a good job of reading your emails, and I'm not on the take from either of them. I pay for Sane Inbox and it's worth every penny.
Oh, so wait, what is Sane Inbox?
Sane Inbox will look at things that appear urgent and things that do not appear urgent. And it takes a couple of days of teaching it what's what. But once it learns, it does a very good job of dividing your email. So what's in front of you is just what you need to triage right then. Because I like to have an empty inbox at the end of the day.
Okay, I have to. I need that.
Well, start here. So I had a boss years ago who said, don't leave work until you have some clear space at the bottom of your inbox pane. So you don't have to be empty, but so that you can see the end of it, so it doesn't feel like it's going forever. Boomerang is the other tool, and that's a free tool, and it works great with Gmail. And Boomerang, it kind of adds a little extension on the bottom of your email. So if I need to, say, ask you something, and I need to know pretty quickly, hey, do you want this theater ticket? Do you want to go with me? I can check the box at the bottom, and it will boomerang back to me in 2 hours, so I don't forget. Because get rid of the email because we keep it in our inbox to remind us.
Yes.
That way I can send you this email. Hey, Decker, want to go see this play with me? Check the box at the bottom and it will say, remind me in 2 hours. I can delete it after I send it. It goes away. And then in 2 hours, I can be like, hey, do you want to go or not? It's a good one.
You have just changed my life.
Boom. I'm here to help. All right, my friends, we got to take a little break, get you news, all that good stuff. We'll be right back in just a bit on 720 WGN.